We're on the Mishnah here on Daf Lamed Omid Beis, towards the bottom of the Daf. And this Mishnah is going to give us situations in which a finder is potter, he's exempt for the mitzvah Shavas Aveda, maybe because that which is lost is not really lost, and there are simonim to indicate that it's not really lost. Maybe because the finder himself is going to suffer a financial loss. And we're going to have a discussion about how many times a person who finds an aved has to return the same object if it keeps getting lost. And how much does the owner of the aved have to pay to the finder in order to offset his losses of bittul malacha that he can't work. So first we get to question number one. And that is what constitutes how to recognize if the object is actually lost. Ezo hi aveda. When do you identify it as an aveda and yechayv in the mitzvah shava? Matza chamar opara roim baderech. Now this is a very profound case of non-aveda, because all the elements are lacking in an aveda. All the elements are here to say that it's protected. The animal is roeh, that means it's grazing. There's no danger, immediate danger to the animal. There's also a room to assume that the bailim sent it out to pasture to graze. It's also baderech, it's not running through any dangerous areas. Is ein zo aveda. In such a case, we're assuming the bailim are well connected to their animal, to their donkey or cow, and they'll be back to pick it up. That's called midas hinichum sham. The second case, however, is chamar vekelev hafuchim. He finds that the saddle on top of the donkey is off, it's upside down, or it's on its side. In such a case, you can bet that it's a lost donkey. This is not something that is normal. This is not something that the Bailam would have allowed to happen. Para rotza ben akrum. Now here we have a double negative here. Because if the para is running, that's not a good sign. That's dangerous for the animal. And not only that, ben akrumim, in the vines, there are a lot of dangerous places between the vines. It could really get damaged and get injured. In these cases, Harezu Aveda, the Sugya Sagamara is going to analyze the middle ground between the Resha and the Seifa. The Resha being when there is a Chiyuv Hashava, the Seifa when there's not. There seems to be such a great gap between the two that you have what's called Diyukim Sosrim. You can come to the opposite conclusion about the middle case if you analyze the ratio, if you analyze the seifa. I'm just giving you a little bit of a preview of coming attractions. Then the Mishnah goes on to say that there's an obligation to return an aveda many, many times. For example, the same animal gets lost, is returned, and gets lost again. Hichzira ubarcha. He returned the animal to its rightful owner, and it again went out into the wild. And this happened time after time. Afil arbav chamisha pamim chayav lachzira. He's got to return it over and over again. Shenemar, and this is to be derived from the pasuk hashev teshivem loachicha. The double language hashev, which means return at once, but teshiva means again and again, if need be. The Torah Tmima, in his commentary on this pasuk in Parshas Ki Teitze, explains the Hava. I mean, we would think that, as the Gemara explains above a comma, that when an animal goes out, it becomes milumedes, it becomes almost attracted to that particular place, it'll go out again and again. We have the famous cases in the Rockies of the grizzly bears, you know, that attacked the campfire and ate the meat. And no matter where you put the bear, even thousands of miles away, it'll keep coming back, gravitating towards that same campfire site. So therefore, in such a case, if this animal fled to a certain place, you can bet your bottom dollar that it's going to gravitate again to that place, and therefore the owner of the animal has to take special precaution. If the animal again and again goes out to that same spot, keeps fleeing from its home, then poshea, we should be able to assume that the chiv shmira here is not imposed on yenem, on some stranger who finds the animal, but rather it should be imposed upon the owner of the animal, and if he's not careful about his animal, then the finder doesn't have to worry about that. And that's what the pasuk wants to say, that there's no difference between the first time and the 100th time. Even 100 times the animal flees, you got to return it, and the finder is obligated in Hashev Teshivim, a beautiful svara of the Torah Tamima. The Mishnah now analyzes certain situations in which the owner of the lost object has to compensate the finder for a loss of work. And in certain cases, maybe the motzi, the finder, is not even obligated in Hashavas Aveda because of the loss of work. Hoya batel misela, if at the moment the finder chances upon this object or this animal, he was on his way to work, now he has to give up his job. His job is worth a sela. Lo yomar lo, tamely sela. You would think that maybe the finder could say, okay, I'm willing to return your aveda, but you have to compensate me for the full value of my wages, which would be equivalent to a sela. That's how much money I would have earned had it not been that I was toreach, I was using my efforts and my time to return your aveda. Ela nosein lo scharo kipoel. And Rashi explains that, let's say, what does this mean, nosein lo scharo kipoel? Let's give an example. For example, let's say a person does hard work. You know, there's a certain skill and there's attention, you know, and a concentration, etc., etc. And he gets paid, let's say, 4 dinrim for such a piece of work. That's so kosher, that's avodah kosher. Now, ask him, if you would offer him to do a light work, relatively, and take a pay cut. Let's say he would agree that instead of earning 4 dinrim with that very intense, demanding, hard work, he would be willing to take a 50% cut, give him 2 dinrim for avodah kala. In such a case, the meshev aveda, the finder, who would have earned 4 dinrim, but now he's just simply working, you know, in a light kind of work to return someone's aveda, he's willing to take 2 dinrim, and he's reduced his salary from 4 to 2. The reduced salary is what the owner would have to pay him to offset his loss. He would only have to pay him 2 dinrim as opposed to 4 dinrim. And this will be a sugya later on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. The Rishonim ask Akasha here, why does the owner of the object have to pay the finder as a poel batel to offset his loss? We have a principle in the Gemara in Hakones and Bava Kamma, also Gemara Nedarim in the third parak, that Mavriach Ari is not paid. In other words, if I save you a loss, a possible hefsed, then you don't have to pay me for that. That's Mavriach Ari, which literally means he chased away a lion that was about to attack his flock. And Tosis explains that the reason why Mavriach Ari, the owner who was spared this attack of the lion and his flock was saved, doesn't have to pay, is because ein hefsed bor. Tosa says it's not absolutely clear that the mavriach, the person, actually did him a service in saving him from a loss. It's always possible that he would have found another way of protecting himself from the ari. In the case of aveda, the object is already lost. That's called hefsed borer. And that is why the finder is justified in demanding, and the halacha imposes an obligation to live up to that demand, and the owner has to offset the loss of malacha, the loss of wages of the finder. The Rush, however, gives a different explanation. He says that according to the strict letter of the law, it's true. The owner of the aveda does not have to pay and offset the loss of the finder because it's no different than Mavriach Ari. The finder is only offsetting a loss, a hefsed, and he cannot demand payment for that. But there was a special takonis chachamim in the case of Hashavas Aveda to encourage a person to follow through and fulfill the mitzvah Shava, that he shouldn't suffer a loss insofar as he gave up a job and a salary in order to occupy himself and dedicate his time to Hashavas Aveda. So to encourage people to get involved in Hashavas Aveda, the Chacham made a takana to guarantee that their loss of salary would be offset by the owner of the Aveda. And this again comes back to the famous principle that underlies all of Dini Mominos, and that is Hefker Bezen Hefker. The Chacham could say that Reuven has to pay Shimon, even though, according to strict D'oraisa law, Reuven is part of him paying Shimon. The Ramban has a unique approach here. He wants to suggest that there's a fundamental difference between Mavriach Ari and Meshev Aveda. And why is that so? Meshev Aveda, he says, is similar to a poel who is hired to do malacha for his friend. And in that vein, it makes sense that the owner of the lost object would have to pay a poel who's doing malacha for him. In the case of Mavriach Ari, that's not like a poel. There, let's say, for example, Reuven owes money to Shimon, and Levi comes along and pays up that chov. Reuven is not receiving anything. In the case of a poel, the poel is actually doing something, giving something. It's almost like a creative act. And Hashavas Aveda, in which the finder gives the object back to its owner in a physical act of giving, that itself is called pu'ula. And that's something that you can bill for. You can bill someone for doing a pu'ula, for giving you something. But in the case of Mavriach Ari, or Poreachov Shel Chavero, which is a classical application of Mavriach Ari, there's no recipient in the strict sense, meaning although he was saved a loss, spared a loss, he doesn't have to pay a chov, but he didn't get anything new. That creative act of giving him something is not present, and therefore the reality is that it's not similar to a poel. That's the chiddush here of the Ramban. In any event, getting back to our case in the Mishnah, where the Shomer Aveda, the Motzi, is able to have some compensation to offset his loss, that's called Kipoel. What happens if the finder is not willing to give up his work? He doesn't want to get paid Kipoel Batel. He wants the full 4 dinarim. And you can multiply that if you have a skilled worker or a very, you know, trained worker. You know, a psychiatrist maybe gets 500 shekel for an hour for a visit, or $500. And in such a case, he would rather give up on the mitzvah, you know, he'd rather forfeit the mitzvah Hashavas Aveda in order to put in all the energies and all the work and the tircha in order to receive that very, very solid schar. So the halacha has to take into account the possibility of such a scenario of a person who's not willing to, you know, to be offset by saying, well, you're doing a malacha kala, a relatively easier malacha. So what happens in such a case? So here too, the Chachamim got involved in offering a solution for the finder who's not willing to give up his work. Im Yesham Bezdin, which means that, as Rashi says in the middle of Im Yesham Bezdin, Shlosha Bnei Adam, 3 people, the implication is they don't have to really be Chachamim Gidolim, what's called Gomir V'Savir, someone who knows Dinei Mominus well. He took 10 years of his life to learn in a kol of Choshen Mishpat. No, we're talking about what's called Hedyotos. The Miri says it explicitly. And he gets them together to form, I guess you call it, a quasi-bezdin, a kind of tribunal. This is where the Chachamim organized this halacha. And they serve as a bezdin in order to create a tanai. And that's called Masne Bifnei Bezdin. He makes a declaration, the finder, in front of Bezdin, that he's not interested in returning this Aveda unless he gets fully compensated for his work. In such a case, since he made that tanai in front of Bezdin, and I guess with the approval of Bezdin, he went out and on the condition, on the understanding that he would get fully compensated for his work, he got involved in Hashavas Aveda, then that's the halacha. The halacha is that in such a case, the owner of the Aveda would have to pay him the full compensation. Now, if the Baal Aveda is there with him, and he needs the help of the Motzi, okay, then there's no need for Tanai Bezdin. Then he turns to the owner of the Aveda and he says, right, I'm going to do what you can't do, I'm going to do for you in order to get, you know, offset this loss and return your object, but you got to compensate me. And the Baal Aveda said, yes, there's no need for a Bezdin. The Tanai would be directly formulated between the finder and the Baal Aveda. However, if the Baal Aveda is not around, that's where the Takana of Bezdin comes into place, and the Tanai has to be in front of Bezdin. Again, this is a Takanas Chachamim, because as far as Torah law is concerned, the finder would have to return the Aveda. And that's it. He doesn't have rights to demand payment for that or compensation. But the Rabbanan organized in such that he could make a Tanai in front of Bezdin. You don't need Dayanim Ksherim, as we said before, but three Adyotas, and they accept his Tanai. He gets the green light and permission for this kind of conditional Hashavas Aveda, which guarantees that he will be compensated for his loss of four dinrim for the high-powered work that he's doing. But im ein sham Bezdin, bifnei miyasna, how far can this Takanas Chachamim go? You know, they want a presence of three people to set up this Tanai in front of a Kwase Bezdin, but let's say there aren't three people around. The Aveda is urgent. You have to return it or retrieve it now. And the Mishnah Paskins that even in this case, the Chachamim went a step further, Shelo Kodem. And Shelo Kodem means that he's not Chayev in Hashava. He has the right to say that since, you know, nobody is accepting my Tanai, the Baal Aved is not here, there's no three people to serve as a Bezdin, I'm not willing to give up my work and my salary for the sake of Hashava Saveda. And this is all going to be derived, as we'll soon see from the Pasuk Efes, Kilo Yebcha Evyon, Shalcha Karm Shalcha Vero. You don't have to suffer a loss for the sake of preventing someone else from a loss. That's the Mishnah. Now, the Mishnah, if you recall, in the Reisha said that you found a chamor and its saddle is upside down. You found a para and it's running amok, you know, and it's going through krumim, which are dangerous. Then it's an aveda. The Mishnah seems to assume in the Reisha that the chiyuv of Hashavas Aveda would only apply when he sees a para that's rotza bein akramim, and there are two deficits here. There are two, shall we say, dangers that that present or threaten the life of the animal. And we're going to analyze that in just a minute. But first, Let's read the Gemara inside. The Gemara says, "Atu kolhani damrinon lav aveda havi." First of all, clear the air about one thing. I mean, we've had all these mishnayos here in this perek, and the mitzvah hashavas aveda. Are you telling me that in all the mishnayos that we learned, there was a saddle that was upside down, or the animal was running through the krumim, through the vines? Oh, Rabbi Yehuda, no. The Mishnah is not telling you that all the other cases that we had are not considered an Aveda. That's not what the Mishnah is telling you. The Mishnah just wants to give you a barometer, some sort of a principle, an abstract principle, and a simon. How do you identify the Aveda? To tell you that if it's Nikar, if it's clear, that it's not just that the Bailam have placed something down and they're coming back to retrieve it, that's called Anoch Midas, but rather it's here and located Shalomidas Bailam, that's an Aveda. And we need to identify or define in every single scenario that this is Shalomidas Bailam. That's what the Mishnah means to say. Hachi Kavod, this is how we interpret the Mishnah. Ezo hi klal aveda shu chayev ba. Just give me some sort of an abstract principle, an overarching principle, to tell me that it's nikar, it's clear that this is Shalomidas Bailam, that it's a chiyuv hashava. And the answer is, we'll give you a few examples, and you'll extrapolate from them to compare other cases to these paradigms, these examples. For example, Motza Chamor, Upara Roim Badarech. Einzu Aveda, you should see from the circumstances of the scenario that this is not an Aveda. The Chamor or the Para are grazing. They're on the Derech. They're not out in some sort of dangerous area. We have to assume, and we're allowed to assume, that the Bailim are aware of the presence or the location, shall we say, of the Para who's Roa, who's now grazing in the land. The lomi chayev ba, and therefore you're not chayev an hashava. But on the other hand, chamar vekelev hafuchim or par v'ratzav ben akramim. Here are cases where it's nikar, it's clear circumstantially that the bailam are not aware of what's going on. They wouldn't have let their chamar, you know, running around without a proper saddle. They wouldn't let the para run through krumim, which is dangerous. Umachayev ba, and therefore the finder has concluded, based on the overall picture, the circumstances, that it's clear the Bailam are not aware of their object, and therefore you have a Chiyuv Hashava. So the Gemara asks, Uli Olam, are you always going to tell me that if you find a Chamor, or a Para, Roim, Badarech, that's not called an Aveda? Is that an absolute rule that knows no exceptions, and we have to assume that since it's Roa Baderech, the Bailim, the owner, is aware of its presence? Li'olam, now I said li'olam means an absolute rule without exception. That is true, but the closer to pshat is li'olam means that we're talking about a long period of time that passed by. Let's say, for example, you wake up day after day after day and you see the animal in the same position that it was in yesterday. You know, at some point it might occur to you that maybe Taka the Bailim are not aware of where the animal is. Om Rabbi Yudom Rav, Ad Shlosha Yomim. If you see this animal grazing in a certain area, by Derech, 3 days in a row, up until that point, okay, it's not an Aveda. But more than that, you know, let's say day four, again, we're going to have Machloks Rishonim, what happens on day three, but on day four, for sure, we have to assume it's an Aveda. Hechi Dami, what does it mean that up to 3 days, it's not an Aveda? After the third day, it is an Aveda. Ibelel Vasa, if, for example, you see the animal at night grazing in the dark, is afilu chada shaita nami. Even 1 hour should be enough to convince you that you have found an object, an animal, which the bailim have lost, because there's ein darkam liros balayla. You don't usually send out an animal to pasture at night. That's not a smart thing to do. If on the other hand, biyamama, if it was during the day, and the animal is grazing freely, as afilu tuvanami, even if after 3 days, you know, three consecutive days, the animal is still grazing, that's not naved. Lo tzricha. Well, what's the case? Dava chazila bekadmasa ube chash chetah. Now, kadmasa means that it was early before daybreak, before alos hashachar. And chashachta means it was late at night after dark. And this is what he sees. The finder sees this animal grazing before alos hashachar or after darkness at night, tlosa yomi, on 3 consecutive days. Amrinon, in such a case, we have to assume isramuye isramile venafka, that there may be an accident, so to speak, in which the bailim took it out to pasture early in the morning, knowing full well that the day is about to break, and that's, you know, that's a good time for it to pasture. So he got up for Vasika that morning. Oh, or alternatively, he delayed in retrieving his animal until after darkness. That's not called an aveda. So 3 days in a row, you see an animal that's out there grazing, you know, being mocked in the shachar, you know, early in the morning or late at night, after nightfall, you can assume that those were mikrim, those were accidents. But fei, if this goes on beyond 3 days, vadai avedahi, for sure, we have to assume that this is lost, this animal, the bailim is not aware of the whereabouts of the animal, and therefore the mitzvah hashavas aveda kicks in. Tanya nami hachi. Now the Gemara quotes a braisa to support this. Matza talis v'kardom. If he finds a talis or a shovel ba'asratya in a very public place. Now we're on the top of Lamed Aleph, Omed Aleph. So this is a derech sherab m'holchim bo. This is where the people go. It's like a highway. Upara rotza ben akramim. Alternatively, he finds a para that's on the move. It's running in the vineyard. Hare zo aveda. That's definitely a lost object. Nobody would allow leaving behind any object of value, like a talus or a kardum, in such a public highway. That would be crazy. And in the case of the para, it's not grazing, it's running. It's bena kramen, which is very, very dangerous. That's an aveda. However, talis bitzad goder, kardum bitzad goder. It's very common for a worker, let's say, who takes his beged, let's say it's hot out, and he hangs it up near the goder or places it near this fence. Same thing is true of a worker who works with a kardum, a shovel. That's not called an aveda. And the assumption is that the polim left the kardum or the talis next to the goder of the fence of that soda, and they expect to come back and retrieve it. The same thing applies in the case of para roa bein hakramin. If the para is grazing amongst the vines, ein zu aveda, because again the ikar here that it's a roa, that the cow is grazing. Again, the bein hakramim aspect here is a little bit tricky because that's a bit dangerous. But yet, for some reason, the braisa is going to assume that it's not an aveda. However, in the last case of para roa bein hakramim, shlosha yamim zecher zeh, for 3 days consecutively, the finder is aware of the fact that this animal is amongst the kramim, then harezu aveda, and it becomes an aveda. Again, we have to go back to the Gemara on Lamed Amid Beis to understand this Gemara, because the 3 days means that it was a case where it was, again, to find a chiddush here, was early in the morning and late at night for 3 days. That's a bit unusual, and we have to assume after 3 days that it is an Aveda. Ra Mayim Sheshotfin Uban Hareze Goder Bifnehem. There's some sort of a break in the dam. The waters are streaming down and they're about to inundate someone's field and destroy it. Then set up a fence, a barrier, a dam, in order to prevent the loss of someone else's field. That's also in the gedder, within the framework and definition of Aveda. The Gemara is going to try to prove from this that Karka, not just Metalton, is subject to the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. But in any event, what the Gemara is quoting now is to prove and establish that a para roeh, that if the para is grazing 3 days consecutively, it doesn't become an Aveda until it's beyond 3 days, then it becomes an Aveda. Here we have a machlokes, according to the Drisha, one of the super commentaries on Choshen Mishpat and Simon Reish Samach Aleph, between Tosvis and the Tur. And the question is whether it's up to 3 days that it's not an Aveda, or what it means by 3 days is that 3 days itself makes it into an Aveda. And according to the presentation of the Drisha, there's going to be Machlokas Rishonim. At what point do we assume it's an Aveda? Is only after the third day going into the fourth day, or on the third day itself, that itself makes it into Aveda? Shlosh Yom Hem Kvar Nechshav Kaveda in the language of the Drisha. Now there's a Rashba here that we have to see. The Rashba says that even in the case of Talis and Kardum that are placed or found, let's say, next to the fence, we would say that that's Derech Inuach, but if 3 days go by consecutively and no one is coming to retrieve, to claim the garment or the hatchet, the shovel, then such a long period of time that went by itself is a proof that this is an Aveda. The Ritva agrees with the Rashba, and he adds that you might ask the question, why is it that in the case of Talis and Kardum, the finder does not have to take it? Shouldn't he be afraid that it's going to be grabbed or stolen by a guy? It's a makom sheinu mishtamer, it's out there, and it's accessible to the public. If he takes it and announces it, he's going to prevent a loss for the owner of the kardum and the talis, because the davar sheyesh bo siman. And the Ritva answers that in a case where it appears to be derech inuach, he shouldn't touch it until 3 days go by. And he comes to the conclusion that the bialim must have forgotten about it. Then, and only then, is there a mitzvah of achzara and hashava in order to prevent the possibility of a guy taking it. The Rambam says that lo yigabahem, in the case where it's derech inuach and the bialim forgot about it, he should not take it away. And it doesn't. And Rambam doesn't differentiate or qualify by saying it's less than 3 days, more than 3 days. The Rambam says if it's clearly derech inuach, then you leave it. The case of para, you see the para roaming around, running around. At some point, you get the impression that the bialim did not send this cow out to graze. This was never a derech inuach kind of situation, and therefore you chayv an hashava. Amar Rava, the Torah says a couple extra words in the parasha of Hashavas Aveda, v'chein taseh l'chol Aveda sachicha. Why the word l'chol? There's some sort of ribui. He says, Rav, I think that this ribui is l'rabos Avedas karka. And the chiddush here is that despite the fact that all the objects that are listed, are enumerated in the parasha of Hashavas Aveda, they all have one commonality. They're all metaltalin. They're all movables. Nevertheless, the Torah added the word l'chol to tell us that even the loss of a piece of property of land is also hashavas aveda. A person who can save his friend from the loss of karka, a damage to karka, that too comes under the expanded mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda derived from the extra word Lekol. If not for this extra word Kol, as we said before, the Svara would have been that Dafka Metaltalin, that's called an Aveda. Why? A movable object, once it's lost, is lost forever. That's not true in the case of Karka. Karka, in some sense, is always there. I mean, the damage to a Karka might be surface level, but the Karka per se, going all the way down to the center of the universe, center of the globe, that's permanent. And therefore we need an extra ribui to teach us that the mitzvah Hashavas Aveda incorporates even a case of Karka. Omalei Rav Chananya L'Rova, Tanya de Misaila, have a Braisa Rova to support your claim. And that is Ra Mayim Sheshotfin Uboim Hareza Goda B'fneim. We saw in the Braisa that if a person is aware, he's a spectator, and he sees that the waters are about to inundate someone else's field, he's got to do whatever he can to try to save his friend's field. You see that there's Hashavas Aveda even for Karka. Amalei, the intellectual honesty of Rava, responding to Rav Chananya and saying to him, Imishumha, if that's your proof, lotisayili. That would not absolutely establish, that Bryce would not serve as a proof text for my principle, for my chiddush. Hachamamayaskinan, it could be that the case, the circumstances in the Braisa is Bidi'ika Omrim, when there are sheaves of grains that are in the Sada, the water is about to inundate the field and destroy and carry away this produce, these grains, which are metaltalin. There's no proof that the mitzvah Hashavas Aveda applies to Karka. The Gemara asks, E de Ika Omrim, if there are actually stacks of grains, and that's called metaltalin. Maila Bemer, why did the Braisa have to point this out to us? This is a classical case of Hashavas Aveda. Metaltalin is explicit in the Pasuk. Lo tzricha dispe Omrim de tzricha li ara. We're now assuming, we're laying down the premise that there is no mitzvah Hashavas Aveda in Karka, and the question is, these omrim, these piles and stalks of grains, are they Karka or are they metaltalin? And that's called tzricha li'ara. In other words, they're still attached to the Karka, they haven't been cut down yet, this is before the harvest, they're still what we call mechuba l'karka. Ma'u detem, I would think, Kevin the tzricha l'karka, they're still gaining something from the karka, is kigufa the aradamya, they have the status of karka. And again, this would be nogeh to kama v'kama halachas, in which is a distinction between metaltan and karka, for example, would be nogeh to shibudim, it would be relevant to the question of shvua and nishbon al karkos. Here in this particular context of Hashavas Aveda, it becomes critical to define and classify these omrim as either karka because it's tzricha l'karka, or as metaltalin because they're about to be cut down. You know, even though they need the karka for the, shall we say, the makom hapatish, the final and the complete, but fundamentally they are metaltalin, they're on their own, they don't really need the karka. Kamash malon, the Braisa says that these omrim have the din of metaltalin, and that's why the person who sees the inundation here is obligated to save the omrim insofar as they have the status of metaltalin from the waters that are about to inundate the field and destroy these grains. The Ritva describes this case of omrim as fitting into the following description, the following category. It is tvua tzricha l'karka ktsas. Why? Why does this grain need the karka? Because it's not yet miyubash. In other words, if it stays in the ground before he harvests it, it gets dried out by the sun, and that's beneficial. the Braisa is mechadish to us that that's not considered tzricha l'karka, because it's not actually adding to the growth of the grain, but rather to the dryness of the grain. But in the case, says the Ritva, of grains that really need the karka, there's a yanika, there is nourishment going in and growth as a result of the karka. That grain, such a scenario, has the din of karka. And according to the premise of the Gemara right here, there would be no chiyuv hashava on karka. On these omrim, which are about to be inundated by the flood, lahalacha, the Ritva paskins that Aveda's karka is also included in Aveda. And that's going to be the drasha, based on the drasha of Rava, lechol Aveda sachicha l'rabos Aveda's karka. So halacha l'maisa, even in a case where the grains are actually being nourished by the karka, you would have to save and spare them under the law, the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, from a possible disaster. The Mishnah establishes matzah, chamar upara, roim badarech, ein zu aveda. But if it's para rotza ben akram, areizu aveda. The Gemara is going to analyze the ratio and the sefer of this Mishnah, and there seems to be that law of the excluded middle, an implicit contradiction between the ratio and the sefer, what we said before, diukim sosum, because keep in mind, it's only can be considered a ein zu aveda, in other words, the ptur and the assumption that the bialim are connected to the para, if two conditions are met. Number one, it's roim, the animal is grazing, that indicates that everything is fine and dandy, and it's badarech, it's not in any danger zone. You know, when the animal is ready to return home, or the bialim will take it home, or let's just put it this way, in the present state, there's no danger to the animal. So we have two pluses, it's tarte l'tevusa, therefore, ein zu aveda. The sefer, though, gives you the opposite conclusion. When is it considered an aveda? It's got two negatives, tarte l'reusa. It's got, number one, para rotza, the animal, instead of grazing, is running, and number two, it's bein akramim, in a danger zone. Hagufa kasha, says the Gemara. When we look at the Mishnah, there's a stira amrit matzah chamor par roim badarech ein zu aveda. If it's got two pluses, it's number one roim and number two it's badarech. It's not an aveda, implying that if one of those two was lacking, let's say it was roim badarech, hu delo avi aveda, haratza badarech. If it was running but it was still on the derech, which is not dangerous like the krumim, then it would have the status of not being an aveda, because it doesn't have. I'm sorry, it would be an aveda because it has one negative. One negative is enough to make it into aveda. Again, in the ratio of the Mishnah, it's not an aveda because it has two positives. But if you reduce it from two positives down to one negative, then it does become an aveda, and you chayv an hashav according to the resha. And the two scenarios of a single negative would be either a rotza badarech, the animal is on the move, that itself is dangerous because ritza, the animal running, can damage the animal. Maybe it'll end. It'll run so far you'll never be able to find it. And even though it's badarach, rotza is one negative, and that would be an aveda. Or alternatively, be roe bein akramim. Even if the animal is grazing, but it's in a vineyard, and there are branches of the vineyard that could be very hazardous to the animal, to the para in this case. Havi aveda. All that is clear according to the ratio. If we have one negative that could possibly cause damage to the animal, that makes the par into an aveda. But ema sefer, let's look at the sefer, the Mishnah, and when the Mishnah and the sefer wants to come up with a case of an aveda, instead of giving me one negative, it gives me two negatives. And that's the case of para rotza bein hakramin. So you have two negatives tied to the race. That's rotza, which is in itself a hazard. The animal might end up in Yehupitzvilt. And it's bein hakramin, where the branches could be very hazardous to the cow. So the seifa hones in on a double negative and makes it into an aveda. It's rotza and it's bein hakramin. And the Gemara now makes the diuk from the Seifa. When is it considered an Aveda? That's only Ratzah ben Akram hu davi Aveda. It's a double negative. You've got Ritza, which is weakening the animal and threatening that the animal be lost. And it's ben Akramim, which is a Safek Chavola. Ha Ratzah Badarach. If let's say, review that last point, Ha Ratzah Badarach, if the animal was running, which itself is dangerous, although it's in the derech, which is fine, that's a plus, but it's got one minus one plus, or v'roa ben akramim, if it has the plus of roa, but it's ben akram, which is a negative, ein zo aveda. That would not be an aveda, because you need two dangerous or hazardous factors here to combine in order to make it into an aveda. So we have a question here, a possible contradiction between the Reisha and the Seifa. Let's just review. From the Reisha, we get the impression that if there's one negative, that's enough to create an Aveda, status of an Aveda. From the Seifa, we get the impression that it only becomes an Aveda when it has a double negative, Shtei Sibos, L'chshash Nezek. But if there's only one Siba for L'chshash Nezek, either because the animal is beritza, it's running, or because it's ben akramim, even if it's roa, then it would not be an aveda. You need a double negative. So the Reisha gives you the impression that one negative is sufficient to make it into aveda. The Sefer requires two negatives. Omar Abaye quotes the pasuk in Iov, Yagid Olav Reo, which means Yalamed Olav Chavero, meaning the Reisha and the Sefer are going to, in a sense, shed a light one onto the other. From the Reisha, we're going to learn something about the Seifa. And what is that? Tana, in the Reisha it says, Roa Badorach lo havi aveda, vuadin roa ben akramim. In other words, Abai is putting all the emphasis on the Roa aspect. The Roa is going to, as opposed to Rotza, the Roa is the critical factor to save the object from being an Aveda, to prevent the object from having the status of and the Mechayev of Hashavas Aveda. And therefore, when we read the Reisha, and the Reisha says, Para Roa Badarach Einzu Aveda, it really matters not whether or not the emphasis is not, and the condition is not that it's badarach. Forget about the word badarach. Even if it would be ben akramim, it would not constitute an aveda kolzman, because it's roa. If the animal is roa, that itself is proof positive that it's derech inuach. Don't take it away. Is tana, and the tana in the sefer says rotza ben akramim dahavi aveda. Forget about the Bein HaKrom and just emphasize the word Ratzah. Ratzah is in contrast to Roa. So when we take the Reisha and we speak about what's not an Aveda, the answer is Roa. When we look at the Seifa and we ask when does it constitute an Aveda, the answer is Ratzah. So leave out the Badarach and the Bein HaKrom, and that's secondary. So the Seifa, the Tana is telling us that since it's rotza, the animal is on the move, it's running, that's not a normal situation, that's not a good situation, that's an aveda situation, and v'hu adin rotza b'darach. So in the Reisha, it could be roa ben akramim, because we don't care about the negative ben akramim, we have the roa, and that secures that it's not an aveda. In the Seifa, on the other hand, once we have rotza, that itself endangers the animal, that's for sure not derech inuach, that's an aveda mamish, and we don't care whether it's bein akramim or even if it's badarach. Everything depends upon roa versus rotza. That's going to determine whether you have an aveda where you did not. So it means that Roah is always considered a non-Aveda, and Rotz is always considered an Aveda. Roah is not an Aveda even if it's Bikramim. Rotzah is an Aveda even if it's Badorach. You know, the Shita Mekubetzes points out that it's impossible to interpret the Mishnah that Parah Rotzah Baderech or Roah Ben Akramim becomes the same as Parah Rotzah Ben Akramim and it's Aveda. Because the Bryce itself, which we saw at the beginning of this Amud, explains that a Roah Ben Akramim is not an Aveda. Okay. Omalei Rava. Rava is not a happy camper here with Abai's presentation. E Yagidol of Reo. If you're telling me that the Reisha explains the Sefer and back and forth, that you know they're sort of mutually, they're working reciprocally, is Lisne Kilosa. The Mishnah should have told us the Kal that has more of a Chiddush, and then we would have logically derived the Kolshken Chamirta, the Mochomer case. And therefore, according to your presentation, Rava Lisne Rotza, if the Mishnah in the Reisha wants to tell me that, or I'm sorry, in the Sefer wants to tell me that Rotza is an automatic ipso facto Aveda, that's a danger zone, then it should have told me the greater Chiddush, that Rotza Baderech is an Aveda, even though it's on the road, it's not in a dangerous situation, may not crumb him, nevertheless it is an Aveda. Why did the Mishnah in the Sefer say Rotza Ben Akramim and confused me? It should have told me Rotzah Badarach and I would know for sure Ben Akramim. Or for example, if we go back to the Reisha, I could have Rava could present the same argument against that by Lisni Roa. If Roa is an automatic non-Aveda, it's a Mafkiya Shem Aveda. Why? Because it's grazing nicely. Is he should have told me even Ben Akramim it's not an Aveda, because Roa is, according to you, Abai, an automatic non-Aveda. Vikolshkin, I would have certainly derived the case of Roa Badorech, where everything is fine and dandy, it's not in a danger zone of a Kramim. Why then does the Reisha speak about Roa Badorech? Tell me a greater Chiddush of Roa Ben Akramim. Elam, a Rava. Therefore, Rava reinterprets this Reisha and say for the Mishnah, let's go one by one. Rotza Arotza Lokasha. You have Diyukim Sosrim from the Reisha and the Sefer regarding Rotza, because in the Reisha would seem that Rotza Baderech is an Aveda. Because again, when is it not an Aveda? When it has the double negative of, I'm sorry, it's the double plus, meaning the Tarte Litevusa of both Roa Baderech. So we were medayik from that if it was Rotza Badorech, then it would Rotza Badorech would not be an Aveda. So again, the Reisha seems to imply that Rotza Badorech would be an Aveda, and the Sefer we were medayik from that Rotza Badorech is not an Aveda. Lo kasha ha di apo l'gabi davra v'ha di apo l'gabi mosa. In which direction is this cow running? If it's running towards the Davra, which means the fields, and it's getting further and further away from the city, then we can assume it is lost. And that would be the diuk that we derive from the Reisha, that Rotzah Baderech is an Aveda, because it's Baderech in the opposite direction of the city, from which presumably it got lost. But ha, in the case of the Sefer, from which we medayik, that if it's Rotza, it's not an Aveda, that's the case of the Apo Kavi Masa, where the Para is on the road in the direction of the city itself. Masa means city. And that's why we assume it's not an Aveda. So ask yourself the question as to whether Rotza, in the case of Badarech, is an Aveda or it's not. And the answer is, it depends what Rotzah Baderech you're talking about. Is it Rotzah Baderech in the direction of the city, or is it Rotzah Baderech away from the city, distant, and it's lost? Now, in the case of, that's all in the case of Ratza. If the parah was a roe, then there's no difference between the animal that's grazing with its face towards the sada or towards the city. If it's not running and it's not getting further away from the city, we have nothing to worry about. Now Rava says, let's take up the other stira, roa a roa. Because from the ratio we came to the conclusion that if it was roa ben akramim, it would be an aveda. And the sefer seems to assume that roa ben akramim is not an aveda. Nami lo kasha, I can reconcile that apparent contradiction as well. Why? Kan be avedas gufa, kan be avedas karka. Fascinating chapter of Rava. Rava wants to know, is there a danger to the karka itself? Forget about the para. The para, if it's a roa, is not in danger. It's not really a lost cow. This cow is being well fed in a grazing area. But the problem is this cow endangering the karka? And that's the difference between the resha and the seifa. The resha, which gave us the diuk that if it's roa ben akramim, it's not naveda. The resha was just discussing the para, meaning does the finder have to return the para and take it all the way back to its owner? And the answer is no, he's not chayev, because that's what a para roa is. It's not naveda. However, wait, but before we get to that, however, we have to add one more important point over here, that even though it's roa ben akramim, and we said that kramim endangers the animal because of the anofim of the kerem, that danger to the para only exists if it's rotza ben akramim. Then it might really injure itself on one of the anofim of the kerem. But here we're talking about a case of roa. The animal's not on the move, and the animal is not endangered. But kan, in the sefer, we came to the conclusion that roa ben akram is an aveda. That's talking about avedas karka. With regard to avedas karka, this kerem, this vineyard, has to be protected from the para. The para might pounce and try and trample upon the vines. And the Mishnah, therefore, is teaching me, in the Diuk of the Sefer, that you've got to get the para out of the kerem. It doesn't mean you have to return the para to its owner. It's a roa, and since the roa, it's definitely connected back to it. The bialim are connected to the para, and they'll. But you got to get the para out of the kerem because of the hefsay to the kerem. This animal is eating up the zmoros, the anovim, and it's destroying the kerem. So that according to Rashi, what we're saying here in the case of roa ben akramim is that we just have to remove the para, that's our obligation, from the kerem and protect the kerem, but we need not return the para to its bialim. However, the Rosh has a different view. He holds that once you're obligated to remove the para from the kerem, that already becomes like the case of Ikisha that we discussed yesterday. He began with a pu'ula of Hashavas Aveda, and once he began the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, he has to go all the way. You remember there was a case of Sada and Ear that we discussed yesterday. Here too, as far as the kerem is concerned, the spectator, the finder, has to get the para out of the kerem. Once he's done so, he's already been mischayev. It's already like nutla manaslach zero. He becomes chayev in the full-fledged mitzvah of achzara lebailin. So says the Rosh. I'm a little bit confused here because I would have assumed that once the kerem has been protected and the bailin know they're aware of the whereabouts of the para, they could find the para. Maybe the Rosh is not happy about that because it's no longer Derech Hinuach. Derech Hinuach only applies, you know, in the place where the object was found, not when it was removed, in this case, from the Kerem. But I still see another chiddush in the Rosh. The para is really not the aveda. It's not the cheft of the aveda. If you wanted to define the aveda, the para is not lost. It's roa. Ela what the karka is the aveda. So when we say that hikisha, you started with the mitzvah, you have to complete the mitzvah, that's only vis-a-vis the chefta. You have completed the mitzvah of hashava and hatzola with regard to the chefta, the karka, that's a suffig avud. As soon as you took the par out of the kerem, the par itself was never a chefta that was machayev in the mitzvah of hashava. Why would we say that he began the mitzvah of hashava and he has to return the par to its bailim? That's a big chiddush in the Rosh. In any event, we say the following: Ki ketani roa baderech lo avi aveda haroa ben akrom havi aveda b'avedas karka v'chi ketani rotsa ben akromim havi aveda haroa ben akromim lo avi aveda b'avedas gufa de rotsa ben akromim misakva. When the animal is running amongst the vines, it will be injured. Misakva means it will be injured. That's called a chavola in Hebrew, from anfei akerem, through the ritza. And v'roa ben akromim lo misakva. If it's just grazing and moving at a very slow pace through this, the anfei akerem, it would not be injured, and therefore it's not naveda. The Gemara asks, v'roa ben akromim nihid lo misakva. Even, but when it's grazing slowly amongst the vineyards, even though it's protected, you know, we're assuming it's not going to be injured by the anofim or the kerem, but typically, mishum avedas karka, why don't we establish a chiyuv hashava based on avedas karka? Because it turns out that roa ben akromim in the diuk from the sefer is not an aveda. Why isn't an aveda insofar as the kerem is vulnerable, is about to be or might be damaged? And the Gemara answers, b'dekusi, because the karka is owned by an idol worshipper, a kusi, and there's no chiyuv hashavas aveda with regard to the object, the possession of a kusi. So the Gemara says, typically mishum avedas gufa, if the kerem is owned by a kusi, then the par is going to be lost. The dilma katlula, because the owner of this kerem doesn't want this para running through his kerem and destroying his kerem. Therefore, he's going to kill the para. Maybe he'll slaughter it and eat its meat. I don't know. The Gemara says, "Bi astra demasru vahadri ketole." What's the accepted custom, or perhaps the law of the land, is that first you have to warn the owner of the para before you kill it. So the Gemara says, okay, fine, you're not afraid that he'll kill it because he has to warn it, but Dilma Asra, maybe he already gave the warning and he's about to kill the para. So the Gemara answers, the Asra be below is Haru be. You know what? If the owner of the cow got that warning, you know, was sent to him in the express mail, and he ignored it completely, is Vadi Aveda Midasi, then he's not interested in getting his para out of the kerem. It's going to be killed by the kusi. That's not my problem. In fact, some Rishonim would say that the finder can now take the para home and acquire ownership on it for himself. But the Rambam Shita is that you're not allowed to take it away and be zochin it, even though he doesn't have a chiv hashovel achzir lebailim, but nevertheless it's still not hefker. And that's the question: what's the status of an aveda midas? Is aveda midas hefker, and that indeed is the tour sheet, and therefore the finder can keep it for himself, whereas aveda midas just a tour in the parasha, the mitzvah of hashava, but it still belongs to him and you can't take it and you have to leave it exactly where it is. That's the shitas aramba. The Mishnah tells us, zero uvarcha, zero barcha. Even if the animal was returned, if it went out again, if it fled on five occasions, nevertheless, every single time, hashev teshivim, you have to give it back. Amalei ahumi rabbanon, one of the chacham turned to Rava and asked him, how do you know that you have to return this animal that runs back and forth four and five times. Ema, perhaps Hoshev Chadazim the Teshivim Trezimni. Maybe this pasuk should be interpreted thusly. Hoshev means if on the first occasion the animal was lost, you have to return it. But Teshivim, the extra word Teshivim, is coming to tell you that even if the animal repeated itself on a second occasion, you still chayv an hashava, but not beyond the second time. Amalei, Rava straightens out the whole record over here. The word Hoshev itself, the first word, means even 100 times you have to return it. Hoshev afilu mei pa'amim mashma. Teshivim, ein li ela lebeso, liginosu l'chuvosu v'inayin tamen lomar teshivim mikol makom. The word teshivim here is coming to expand your definition of hashava. What is the extent, the scope of the responsibility? Responsibility of the finder to return the lost object. Does he have to actually bring it to the house of the owner? Or is it enough if he leaves it in the premises of the owner? Let's say the owner owns a flower garden or a backyard. Is it enough that you put it there? And that's what the Teshivim is coming to tell us. Now this is going to open up a whole Pandora's box, which is going to take us all the way from Lamed Aleph, from an Aleph, to the middle of Lamed Aleph, Amid Beis. There are many times where the Torah uses a double language, and the question is always going to arise as to what the second word is coming to add. What's the ribuy of the second word? In this case, Hashiv, and then Teshivim. The Teshivim expands the scope of Hashava, which means that the Meshiv, or the Motzi, if you want to call him that, is Potter from his Chiv the very moment he puts it in the premises, in the garden, or the Churva is a deserted kind of building. That's also considered Hashava. And that's what we derive from Teshivim. So Gemara wants to clarify this interpretation of Rava Hechidami. What is the exact case where the finder is returning the object to the deserted building or to the garden of its owner? Either Mintura, if this garden or this building is Mishtamer, Mintura means Mishtamer, no one's going to take it from there. Pshita, then of course that's Hashava. There's no Chiddush here, and we don't need the extra Pasuk Teshivim for that. The Delo Mintura, if on the other hand it's exposed and anyone could come along and take it from the Gina or from the Churva, Amai, then why is that a Kiyum of Hashava? Hashava means get the object back to its owner, and it's going to be lost. Liolam says the Gemara, the Mintura. We're talking about a case where it's a protected area. This Gina and Churva are Mishtamrim, as we would say. Ah, V'Hokamashma, you're asking me, what's the Chiddush of the extra word Teshivim? The answer is, the Lo Be'inon Das Bailim. You would have thought that Hashava requires notifying the Bailim. Let's say, for example, in the case of a Shomer, the case of a Gazlan, all those who are obligated to return an object to its owner, they have to notify the owner. Here's the exception to the rule. The extra Teshivim in the Parashah of Hashava Saveda tells me that here's one case where you don't require Hashava Midas Bailim, Kidder Rabbi Lazar. Again, when we say it doesn't require Hashava Midas Bailim, but it does require Hashava to a Makom Mishtamer, and hopefully the Bailim will figure out, they'll ultimately retrieve their lost animal, let's say, from the Gina. And the Gemara quotes Rabbi Lazar, who says, the Amar HaKol, all cases of Shomrim, Tzrichim Das Bailim, they can only return the object to the Mafkid if and when they notify the owner of the object that they have returned his object. Otherwise, the Achrayus, the responsibility continues. Chutz Mi Hashavos Aveda. Shator Ribso Hashavos Harbe. In the case of an Aveda, the Torah was, shall we say, lenient in terms of the extent and the scope of the responsibility of the finder, and alleviated his responsibility to notify the Bailim as long as he puts it back into the premises in a place that's Mishtamer, that is sufficient, and Bazeh Yotza Yedei Chovasi is no longer responsible for the animal. Now, once that Chacham had the attention of Rava, asking him about the double language of Hashem Teshivim, he began to barrage him with a whole slew of questions of the same ilk. And he starts with the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan, where the Torah in Parshas Kisitza uses a double language. Shalach to Shalach Esa'im Vesabonim Tikach Loch. Ema, shall we say that Shalach means once, Chadazimna, and now the animal, the bird, excuse me, comes back to the nest, Tishalach, Tishalach, is a second time, Trei Zimni. And yet the Mishnah says in Chulin, towards the end of Chulin, in the Sugi Reishis Hagez and Shiluach HaKan, that Shilcha V'chazra Afilu Arba V'chamesh Pravim Chayav Lachzor V'lsholcha, no matter how many times the bird comes back, you have to send it out and fulfill that mitzvah. Amalei Rava says again, let's get the record straight. Shaleach, even one word, would indicate Afilu Mea Pa'amim Mashma. No matter how many times the bird comes back, you're still chayv in the mitzvah of Shaleach. Tishalach is coming for a different reason. Ein li ela l'dvar reshus, l'dvar mitzvah minayin, talmud lomar tishalach mikol makom. What does this mean? There's something called reshus and there's something called a dvar mitzvah. In some cases, you know, there's no mitzvah, in most cases I should say, there's no mitzvah of taking the mother, and so the mitzvah of shalach, of sending the mother, is clear, and that's unquestionable. But what about a case where you would really, based on a certain mitzvah, want to take the mother bird for that mitzvah, the sole purpose of the mitzvah? And that's the case called Taras HaMetzorah in Parshas, in Perek Yudalid of Vayikra. It says, V'tziva HaKohen V'lokach LaMetar Shtei Tziporim Chayos Tahoros. So you want to take this bird for Taras HaMetzorah. The Nebuch the Metzorah needs, in the process of his purification, the ceremony has to require two Tziporim. And now, what do you have here? You have this bird, and on the one end, you want to fulfill the essay of lokach, of lekicha lamitar for the mitzvah. But on the other hand, you have to fulfill the mitzvah of shalach to send out the bird. And now you have two mitzvahs that are directly colliding one with the other. And there's a logical reason to assume that, you know what, maybe the mitzvah of Taras HaMetzorah should take precedence and should trump the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan because of the great element here of Shalom Bayis. The Metzorah is Osu B'Tashrina Mita, and he's separated from his wife in order to re-establish the harmony and the closeness of marriage. We want to fulfill this mitzvah of Alokach LaMetayr, the Taras HaMetzorah, and therefore in my Avamin I would have suggested that in such a case, forget about sending the bird, just take the bird for the Taras HaMetzorah. And for that I need the extra pasuk Tishalach, which is going to tell me that the mitzvah of Shiluach HaEm, of Shalach Tishalach, trumps the mitzvah of Taras HaMetzorah. And that's the chiddush here of the word Tishalach. Omalei Ahumi Rabbanon L'Rava. And again, this last piece about Taras HaMetzorah versus Shiluach HaKan is a classical example of what we mentioned the other day, essay versus essay, and you don't know which should take precedent. And we thought, if not for this pasuk, that Metzorah takes precedent insofar as has a kiyum of Shalom Bayis, Kamashva, we need the extra pasuk. No, Shiluach HaKan trumps even the great mitzvah of Taras HaMetzorah. Go find another bird. So the same Chacham asks the same Rava the question again about the double language in the mitzvah in the parasha of Tochacha. In Parashas Kedoshim in Vayikra it says, Hocheach Tochiach Samisecha, double language. V'ema, shall we suggest, Hocheach means, give him Tochacha once, Chadazimna. Tochiach, if he realizes that his Tochacha was not successful, and the Avaryon continues in his ways, Trei Zimni, you have to give him Tochacha a second time around. Amale, so Rava responds that the Hochech itself, the first word in the Pasuk, is Hochech afilu mea pa'amit mashma. The fact that you have to continuously be mochiach someone and castigate him for his sins to try to straighten on the way, even 100 times over and over again, that we derive from the Pasuk Hochech. The extra word tochiach is ainli elo harav l'talmid. Talmud l'rav minayin. Certainly, the rabbi, the master, has to give musar and tochacha to his student. But what about the reverse? Let's say the Talmud wants to give tochacha to his Rebbe. How do we know that that also comes under the purview of the mitzvah of tochacha? Talmud lomar ocher tochiach mikol makom, even a Talmud has to give tochacha for his Rebbe. The Ramban, quoting a sugyan erchin of hocheach es chavero v'lo kibel minayin shechozer mochicho tamlo tochiach mikol makom, you see that the extra word tochiach is coming from according to that sugyan erchin to teach us that even if the recipient of the tochach has not accepted the tochach, you have to continue to give him tochacha. So we see that tochiach is teaching us mea pa'amim. Here the Gemara comes to the opposite conclusion, that hocheach would teach us mea pa'amim. We need the tochiach in order to establish Talmud l'rav. Says the Ramban at Teretz, our sugi is talking about a person who repeatedly violates the same avera, and therefore you have a continuous obligation to be mochiach him on that same avera if he hasn't yet successfully straightened himself out. And that comes from the word hocheach. I don't need tochiach for that. What we don't know is, it's another possible pshat, but let's get back to the Ramban's pshat. I'm sorry. The Ramban is talking about a case of the gavra, meaning, let's say you gave tochacha to the person, call him Ruvain, for violating one particular avera, avera X. Now you want to question whether you can, and he doesn't accept that tochacha. He still continues in his ways, and he violates that avera X that you gave him tochacha. Now he violates avera Y, and the havamina here is that the gavra is mufka, he's not in the parish of Kabbalah's tochacha. And for that we need the word tochiach in order to establish that the gavra is still within the parish of tochacha. Even if he wasn't able to rectify one particular sin, you still have an obligation to give him and castigate him on another sin, from X sin to Y sin. The gavra is still in the parasha of tochacha. That does not necessarily teach me about a case where he repeats the same avera over and over again. In other words, if he's not being mekabel tochacha on that avera, okay, maybe he'll be mekabel tochacha on another avera, and that's hocheach afilu mea pa'amim on 100 different averos. But if he violates the same avera again and again, how do you know that you chayev in tochacha and you don't give up hope in terms of the relationship between the gavra, the avarion, and that particular avera? When you single out one avera, for that we need tochiach. Right, hocheach, tochiach, the extra word tochiach, and that's the sugya in Erevin. So there's no steer between the two sugyas. Our sugya maintains that hocheach afilu mea pa'amim v'yachas on 100 different sins. The sugya in Erevin wants to know, is there a repeated chiv on the repeated avera if it's the same exact avera? For that we need tochiach. Again, you might ask, well, we need the word tochiach here in our sugya to teach us that even a Talmud is chayv in tochacha to his Rebbe, whereas the sugya in Erchin derives from tochiach that you have to be mochiachim repeatedly on the same avera that he repeats over and over again. And the Ramban answers that the word tochiach means li'olam. always, continuously. And that teaches us two things. It teaches us li'olam, as far as who is obligated in tochacha, in this case the Talmud, and li'olam teaches us, even though he repeats the same sin over and over again. Now, the Chacham continues with his questioning of Rava, and he moves on to the parasha of the mitzvah of Te'ina and the mitzvah of Prika. In the mitzvah of Prika, which means to help someone take the burden off the animal's back, the pasuk says in Shmos Chav Gimel, Ki sirech hamor sonacha rovetz tachas maso, V'chadalta me'azov lo ozov tazov imo. Again, in double language, ozov tazov. So we're talking about preko, which means unloading. Ein li ela ba'olav imo. I might think that this only applies, the mitzvah of preko, when the owner of the animal, the owner of the masa, is there with him, and they're going to do this as a joint effort. Kisha'ein Bolav Imo, supposing the Bailim cannot help him do this Prika for whatever reason, maybe he's too weak, or maybe he's not there at that particular second, the animal is collapsing under the weight of this burden. Minayin, how do you know you're still chayiv in Prika to do it as a solo job? Tamalomar Azov Tazov Mikol Makom. Now we move on to the same kind of question with regard to the mitzvah of Te'ina, which means to get the burden up onto the animal. The Torah says, not in Shmos, but rather in Dvarim Chav Beis, Lo Siresh Es Chamor Achicha Oshor Noflu Badoch V'Salam Tem Hakeim Tokeim Imo. You know, set up the burden onto the animal. Ainly Ella, I only know Te'ina with Bolav Imo, that the owner of this masa is helping you out, and you're doing it as a joint effort. What if he's not able to help you? Should you have an obligation single-handedly of te'ina, of putting it back on the animal's back? Tamulomar hakem tokim mikolmakom. The parasha of te'ina, the Torah uses this double language of hakem tokim to teach you that even as a solo effort, you're still obligated in the mitzvah of Te'ina. So the Gemara says, Lama li lemichtav prika v'lama li lemichtav te'ina. Why do we need both prika and te'ina? And here we have machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi interprets the sugya as meaning, why do we need two mitzvahs or two psukim? Namely, the obligation of prika and the obligation of te'ina. Why can't we derive one from the other? Tosis, the second Tosis on our page, disagrees with Rashi, and he believes that the Gemara's question is back on the issue of Ein Balav Imo. Just the very last discussion that we had, and we had a double language in both Prika and in Te'ina to teach us that as a solo effort, you are obligated in cases where the Bailam have no ability to help you to do the Prika or the Te'ina by yourself without any help from the Bailam. Why do you need two? That's the way Tosfos learns. Why not teach us that the solo obligation exists in Prika and I would derive henceforth Te'ina or vice versa? So those are the two ways of learning this Gemara. And the Gemara says, Tzrichi. We need both Prika and Te'ina. And we'll start with interpreting this Gemara like Rashi. De'ikas rachmana Prika. The Torah certainly obligates me to take the burden off the animal, but not necessarily to put it back on the animal. I need a special pasuk for Te'ina. Hava mina, what's unique about Prika? Number one, Mishum de'ika tzar balichayim, the animal is about to collapse. It's suffering tremendously from the burden. Lighten its burden. Ve'ika number two, chisar and kiss. The animal itself is weak and getting weaker and weaker by the second because of this burden on its back. And the animal is not going to be able to work tomorrow. Both of these urgent pressing needs are missing, are omitted, are lacking in the case of Te'ina. On the contrary, you're adding a burden to the animal. not lightening its burden, is Emo Lo. Maybe the Torah never obligates you into Ina. Tina doesn't have those unique, urgent, pressing features that exist in Prika. But for Iashmin and Teina, and you might say, well, teach me Teina and Kolshkein, I would certainly derive Prika. But the answer is Mishum Dibeschar. We're going to see soon, maybe not today, but tomorrow, Mirz Hashem, that the Chachamim of Rabbi Shimon argue that the mitzvah of Teina only applies Bischar, meaning there's no gratis, there's no freebie here. The owner of the animal that's asking me to aid in getting his heavy merchandise onto the animal's back, that's not a freebie. The person who's being requested can demand as a condition that he be paid for his work. He's really acting as a poel and he should be paid for his work. Aval Prika, which is Bechinam, again, because the logic is that Prika, there's a pressing need beside the animal itself. You're not just a poel. And that independent mitzvah of Prika is Bechinam, which means that the mitzvah of Prika applies gratis. Ema, I would think, lo. The Torah did not obligate a person in Prika, if I only had Teina. Again, you would have a Kal v'chomer for sure, but that would only mean Teina. That would only mean Prika Bischar, Dial of Amen Adin. If Teina is going to teach me Prika, how do I know that Prika is Bechinam? When Teina itself, the Malamed, is only Bischar, Tzricha, I need the Torah to give me the Parsha of Prika and establish that the Zachiv Prika gratis Bechinam. Now, all of this is fine according to Rashi, explaining why and how we justify two Parshios and two Mitzvahs, Prika and Teina. According to Tosis, that the whole Nidon here, and that's what the Gemara wanted to analyze, is the question of a solo effort of Ein Bal of Imo, then the Gemara's answer is as follows. You can't derive the Chiv Teina as a solo effort in Ein Bal of Imo. The Bailam can't help you from Prika, because in Prika, I understand very well, because of the special nature of Tzar Bali Chaim, that Machayv, and the Machayv of Chisar Kis, then that you have to do and perform that mitzvah prika, even if the Bailam can't help you. And in the flip side, if I only had the din of Ein Bal of Imo in the case of Teina, I would know that's bischar, but I would not be able to derive Ein Bal of Imo in prika bechinam. So the Gemara asks Ula Reb Shimon, that all works out with the Chachamim. The Amar Reb Shimon is of the opinion later on in Daf Lamed Beis, Af Teina Bechinam, that even in the case of the mitzvah of Teina, he cannot demand payment. My Ikal Meimar. We're back to our old question, why couldn't the Torah just simply give us the case of Teina, and therefore Teina, which is Bischar, and how much more so Yechayv and Prika? And the Gemara answers, L'Rabbi Shimon lo mesayme kroy. Rabbi Shimon understands that when you compare the two psukim, one in Shmos and one in Dvarim, you'll never be able to know exactly what the Torah is talking about. Is the Torah talking about Prika or Teina? Meaning that even the pasuk from which we derive Teina, which is Hakem Takem, could be interpreted as referring to Prika. So none of the psukim really indicate in a definitive way what they're talking about. And in that case, we wouldn't derive the chiyuv of Teina insofar as Teina is less urgent than Prika. It doesn't have those elements of Yesh Batzar, Bali Chaim, and Chisorin Kis. Therefore, the Torah needs two parshios. And again, we're presenting the sugi according to Rashi. One parsha, and we'll know that one parsha is the more simple case, the more urgent case of Prika, but the fact that the Torah gave me a second parsha of Hakem Takem, I'm going to derive that that's the case of Teina. Now, Tosis Divra Maskel Rebbe asks the question, Lishitoso, the way they've been interpreting this Gemara, that we needed to derive in two parshios, in two mitzvahs, in two psukim of Prika and Teina, that there's a solo chiyuv. So why, how does Gemara answer that question according to Reb Shimon? And again, with a slightly different version, but more or less the same application as Rashi, we need to know that even if Ein Bol of Imo, there still is a ribui in both cases, because Lo Masai Mikroi, we don't know if the Torah is talking, if the Torah hadn't added another parasha, maybe the Bail of Imo, or excuse me, the Ein Bail of Imo would only apply in the case of Prika, where there's the independent Machayev of Tsar Bali Chayim. Now the Gemara asks a different question. Lomali Lemichtav Hani Tarte, Velomali Lemichtav Aveda. Once I have Prika Te'ina, then I should certainly understand the Chiv of Hashavas Aveda. Or perhaps the Gemara is going in the opposite direction. Once I have the Parash of Hashavas Aveda, how much more so should I be able to derive the Chiv of Prika Te'ina from Hashavas Aveda? Because in the case of Prika and Te'ina, we want to set up a Chiv that applies even if the Bailim are not able to help the Porek or the Toen, as we called it before, the solo effort. And that Lechor we should derive from Aveda, because in Aveda the Bailim are nowhere to be found, and they're certainly not helping out the Meshiv. But the Gemara is going to answer that we would have thought that in Prika Te'ina, the Bailim are available at least. Maybe they're not capable of helping, but the very fact that the Bailim are there, that itself would pater, would exempt the other person, because he needs a Messiah, he can't do it himself. And in the case of Aveda, the Bailim are not there, and therefore he has to do it himself. There's no other way of doing it but a solo effort. The Torah is being Mechadish here in Prika Te'ina, that the Bailim are not obligated to hire a Poel to do the work for them, but the Chiv is on the Porek and Toen in a case where the Bailim can't help him at all. So that's going to be the Shakel of Tari of this Gemara. Tzrichi, the Ikos Rachmanani Tarti. If we only had these two cases of Prika Te'ina, we would not be able to derive Hashavas Aveda Mishum de Tzara de Mora Isa, Tzara de Da Isa. There's a double Tzar here. Number one, the owner of the animal is mitzar because he's losing his animal. And number two, there's the tzar of the behema that has to be alleviated from its burden. In the case of Aveda, the tzar of the mar isa, but tzar of the da less. So there's no tzar on the part of the animal here. What we're worried about is the tzar of the mar insofar as he's losing his possessions. Emo lo, maybe there's no chiv hashava. The Iyashmin and Aveda, if we only had the parasha, the Chiyuv Mitzvah, Hashavas Aveda, we would say, Mishum Delesa Lamar Ba'ada, the owner of the lost object is nowhere to be found, and you can't even dream of expecting that the owner of the Aveda would be able to take in the Aveda. But here, Avalhani Tarat, in the case of Pre-Cantina, we're turning to Laman Alpha and Beis, the Isa Lamari, Lemora Bada, the owner of the animal is there, right? Ozov Tazov Imo, indicating he's there with you, is Emolo. Maybe there's no Chiva Prikatida Tzricha, and that's why I need these mitzvos. Now, once the Gemara brings these drashos of Kfelus, Lashon HaTorah, double languages, the Gemara now goes into the parasha of Rotzeach. The law of a Rotzeach is that he's put to death by Saif, which is a kind of decapitation, and that's derived from the parsha at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. It says, Mos Yumas Hamake Rotzeachu. And what's the double language of Mos Yumas? Ainly, I only know that Bezdin can put to death this murderer, Ela B'misach Suvabo, which is Saif. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin derives from a pasuk in Shmos that a rotzeach is nidon b'sayif, because the pasuk there says, ki yaki ish es avdo es amoso b'shevet, u'meis tachas yodo nokom yinokem, and the kom is always b'sayif, that's based on a pasuk, v'yikra chavav, v'yvesi, alechem cherev no kemes, is cherev no kemes. So let's say for in a scenario where it's impossible for Beis Din to implement Misa Saif, Minayin Shem Iyata Yochala Misa B'Misa Ksuvabo, Shata Rashayla Misa B'Chol Misa Shtayochala Miso. Let's say, for example, the murderer is fleeing and he's about to get on a boat, and the only way you could put him to death is by throwing, by, let's say, shooting an arrow at him or causing his death by drowning. Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk most humas, the double language, Mikol Makom, that if Beis Din can't fulfill the Lechatchila the way that the Torah would recommend as a first choice to put him to death, that capital punishment is not feasible. You're going to lose the fugitive. Then put him to death by any other method, and that's derived from the most humas, Mikol Makom. The Gemara now goes on to another parsha, the parsha of Iraridachas. There too we have a double language of Hake Take. And all this is going to continue here on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. And Emirat Shem will pick that up in the next year.